not surpassed, penetrating and perfect truth. It's still limited, even in 100,000 myriad vows. Now we can see and hear it, becoming member and accepted. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with my soul.
Amish the Buddha, Amish the Dharma, Amish the Sangha. A couple weeks ago I talked about death in the sense of the continuity. While there's a break in appearance at the time of death, there is actually a continuity. It's a change, but it's not an extinction. I'd like to amplify that a little bit. There have been a couple more deaths of people close to members of our community just in the past 2 weeks. The father of one of our monks and a neighbor with whom we're very good friends died this week. I'd like to speak about death in the light of something River Master said. I heard her say first when I was a very young monk. She said that the death of one man is the death of all men. The death of one person is the death of all people. The death of one being is the death of all beings. Imagine for a moment that you could just somehow think yourself out of existence. You could like push a little button like on a cell phone and you would just turn off. Turn off now and forever. Many people think of death like this. It's like the button gets pushed at a certain point and there's just oblivion. In my last talk on continuity, I pointed out that that's really not the case. I'd like to just generalize a little bit from that at the start of this talk and just point out that it may simply be the case that our whole idea of non-existence is just an imagined thing. You know, what we actually know from our experience is existence, not non-existence. We might think, well, there's an empty space. In empty space, there's non-existence. Actually, that's not true either. They prove that space is teeming with existence. Seemingly empty space is teeming with existence. All kinds of stuff going on in so-called empty space. You know, until very recently, people didn't really have any concept of empty space. Until the last couple centuries, people didn't know about so-called outer space beyond our atmosphere. What we actually know is existence. What we actually know of life is life. And death occurs as one aspect of that whole of existence and of life. What we can see of death, what we can perceive of death with our senses, is that it is a momentous change. But our senses don't give us any proof that there is just a change of state to a kind of non-existence. This is something that's true of me and of you and of all beings. So it's something that we all share. We all share the fact that we are in a kind of net or continuing flow of life, of existence. It's like we're all in this stream, floating down the stream together, and we bump up against each other. We see heads bob up above the waves and down below the waves. Yet there is this continuity, this flow with which we are all caught and from which, as far as we know, no one just escapes. Some people think that at the time of death, if someone is enlightened and they clean up all the karma, that then they escape this flow. I think that's a mistaken view. I think what the enlightened person who's cleaned up all the karma escapes is the round of birth and death caused by greed, hate, and delusion. But I think that a tremendous flow of merit continues from that person's life as part of that continuing flow of existence and of life. I'm thinking of your life with a capital L. And that flow of merit out of that person's life that can then benefit all the other lives, all the other beings whose heads are bobbing up and down in the stream. When one person's head bobs down and they temporarily disappear, if I witness this and I'm in the stream too, it is a reminder to me that this will happen to me too, perhaps in the next moment, perhaps in a few years' time. That I, like that other person, am part of this flow. I could say I like that other being because the death of a little insect or of an animal or of a plant is also a reminder of my own mortality. And not only of my mortality, but of this flow of which we are a part and of which continual change is an aspect. I never asked Reverend Master, well, exactly what do you mean when you say that the death of one man is the death of all men? But if we just let those words kind of hang in the air, you know, one meaning, the most obvious meaning, I think, is that the death of one being is a reminder to other beings of their own mortality and of the mortality of all beings and of the universality of impermanence in our lives and in all life and all existence. Another perhaps less obvious meaning is that in the long run there's a continual reshuffling of the cards going on, so to speak, karmically. And what may be the reshuffling that may happen at the time of one person's death may profoundly influence the ongoing existence of many beings, especially when the reshuffling happens at the time of their death. For example, one being dies and leaves a certain kind of karmic jangle behind, which then someone else picks up at birth, along with a whole bunch of other stuff from other sources, perhaps, and so on. You can see how, after only a few deaths and births, there can be a wide dispersal of the karmic need, and a similarly wide dispersal of merit, picking up that need in this ongoing flow, so that your need may end up being my need. Your merit may end up being the merit that helps my need down the road. And if we go look far ahead into hundreds or thousands of lifetimes and through many different forms of existence, you see a very vast intermingling. And you can see the bodhisattvic work being done by every little bit of merit and the helping and rescuing of even the greatest, deepest need, the greatest confusion, the deepest anguish of the heart. At the beginning of this talk, I painted the picture that we are caught in this stream and cannot escape. But from the point of view that we've got to now in the talk, you'd say we're the beneficiaries at all times, now and in the future, of the compassion that is inherent within this flow of existence, flow of life. You can see why the great Mahayana Sutras portray the reality of existence in such grand terms and on such a vast scale. If one wishes to imagine the future, I suggest that it is much more helpful to us right here and right now to imagine this future of cosmic compassion eternally working for the benefit of all beings than it is to imagine the future of mere oblivion.